Hello all. Thanks for attending the Madison Food Policy Council meeting of Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. This meeting is being held virtually and is also being recorded per Madison General Ordinance 33.01, Section 12. Please adhere to virtual meetings etiquette by doing the following. All Food Policy Council members, please keep cameras on during the meeting. Community members, guests, and staff, please keep cameras off during the meeting unless speaking. And all attendees, please keep mics muted unless called upon by the chair, which is me, after raising your hand virtually. Attendees calling in can use star 6 to mute and unmute in the Zoom platform and star 9 to raise your hand. So, moving to the agenda. Don't want to miss anything. The first thing is to look back at our minutes from not last month, but from April 16th. And I'm looking for a motion to approve and a second, after which, if there are edits, then we can do that'll be the next step. Chris?
I'll move to approve the minutes from our April meeting.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, second from Nan. I will assume unanimous consent on that motion unless someone raises their virtual hand to call for a roll call vote or has an amendment on the notes. But seeing no hands, and since I looked at it as well and it looks good, the motion passes. And the next thing is, sorry, now I'm got confused which minutes I'm looking at. Getting rid of April. Okay, the next thing is public comment, which we don't have any items on the agenda, but is there any comment from the public on, I don't know, food policy in general?
Yeah, no, nothing submitted this month, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Nick. And similarly, we don't have anything to vote for, so I don't think we have any disclosures and recusals. And that would be where you'd disclose conflicts of interest or reasons why you might not want to vote on something. And the reason why I'm doing these rules is because we're going to my report from my chair. Our chair, me. And the first part of that is I want to welcome Matt Salbago, our newest member of the Food Policy Council. Matt, would you like to introduce yourself a little?
Yeah, thank you for the welcome. My name is Matthew, but you can call me Matt. I'm from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, but I attended University of Wisconsin, Madison, and have lived there since. I'm currently doing a master's degree in organic agriculture and food systems is the title of the program. I guess I have experience working on some farms in Madison. I worked at TP Produce. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that farm. They're in Evansville. I worked there for 3 years, but yeah, I'm just looking to kind of get engaged with Madison to start helping empower Madison people to be food sovereign, and learn a little bit about government, and help solidify Wisconsin's and Madison's food identity. So yeah, I'm quite excited.
Cool. Thanks, Matt. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're gonna be poaching you for our working groups. Then the other part of this is a bit of a new business preview for next month. Is we'll have a presentation from the Food Shed Partnership, which is I'll give you the preview that they sent so that it doesn't have any of my which is the most important part of the group. Anyway, it is a forward-thinking initiative designed to strengthen our local food system by bridging the gap between local farmers and a wide range of community markets, from grocery stores and restaurants to food pantries. It'll function as a centralized hub on, now I am adding things, on the north side of Madison for aggregation, processing, and storage. And its goal is to support farmers, particularly those from historically marginalized and underserved backgrounds who often face barriers to infrastructure and wholesale market access. It's a collaboration of key organizations like Fair Share CSA Coalition, the REAP Food Group, Pasture and Penalty, and the Community Action Coalition for South Central Wisconsin, who will be the one who's given the presentation, I believe, Andrew Hurst. The Food Shed Partnership aims to ensure that fresh local produce reaches every corner of our community. With a climate adaptive, equity-centered approach, this partnership is committed to fostering a resilient and inclusive local food system that supports both farmers and underserved communities. So yeah, come to the next month's meeting and we'll hear even more. Devika, you got a hand.
Can you just repeat the name of that initiative or group?
Yeah, so the initiative is the Food Shed Partnership, which is, I think, doing a lot of things. And I guess my little preview is that it's the main sort of central thing that it's built around is a processing and aggregation hub for small farmers to put food through to be able to sell to larger institutional buyers. But yeah, Food Shed Partnership. Food Shed is one word. And yeah, Community Action Coalition, I think, is this like center org. But yeah, I'll say that. I'm not any of the orgs talked about, so I'm uncomfortable answering any more questions. Or even that one. Okay, let's go to our regular business reports, which is the first of which is regional food system planning.
Yeah, give me 1 second, I'll pull up my notes. But yeah, we have a few exciting updates. The food plan is, I'd say, solidly into our community engagement phase right now. So we're really focused on getting out into the community, understanding what folks' needs are, related to the food system. And again, we're taking this holistic approach, engaging different sectors of the food supply chain, from agriculture to processing, distribution, retail. A huge focus is on consumers and what their needs are. And then also thinking about sort of that last sector that has many names or many features, but it's talking about food distribution or like redistribution and food waste and that kind of stuff. Yeah, the project has been moving along well. We both updates or we have surveys that people can get involved with. I think I've shared with that with you all before, both for producers right now and consumers. So looking for help distributing those surveys out. We're almost at 500 survey responses for the consumer survey and have a good representation of different communities in Dane County. I'd love to see a little more engagement on the consumer survey outside of Madison area or specifically rural Dane County. But other demographics, I think we're getting a really good mix and doing a good job of like targeting different demographics that we were initially missing. So we have the surveys. We also have a team of community navigators that are working under Abba Tucker, who's leading the consumer engagement. And those community navigators are going out to a few or a couple events a week throughout the county to table and let people know about the food plan process, how they can get involved, and just ask some really basic questions about how people are accessing food and what their experience is related to that. So you might see people out in the community. And then we've also been launching this what we're calling decentralized community engagement. So we're working with different organizations and individuals who are actively already present in the community, giving them some funding to add some food plan specific engagement into work that they're already doing. So we're working with orgs like Rooted, Vera Court, Kennedy Heights, Project Home. We just had a couple focus groups led by Jamie Bugle at the Dane County Farmers Market to understand what farmers market manager needs are. So just to show you, like, there's a wide reach that we're using through that strategy. We've used about half of our funding for that specifically, which we had set aside $40,000 for. So we have somewhere around $20,000 left to help fund this community engagement process, and we're looking for like a second round of applicants. I've sent an email to Nick, who can follow up and share all these updates and links to all these things that you can help share and connect people to. I think the last thing I want to focus on is we have two public events coming up. One next a week from today, next Wednesday, at the UW South Madison Partnership building on South Park Street. And we're hosting, well, we have that one next week, 5:30 to 7, South Madison Partnership building. And then we also have one on July 22nd at Brick Cider, which is a Tuesday. Same time, 5:30 to 7 p.m. Both of those events we're calling town halls, and the idea is that we'll give sort of half of the event will be a state of our food system sort of presentation, talking about some of the findings and trends that are going on in the food plan process, and then the second half will be an open discussion, sort of facilitated discussion by ABBA, where we will, gauge attendees' thoughts related to food systems, what issues they care about, what their experiences are, and just sort of facilitating that conversation. So excited about both of those. This is our first, I would say, like public-facing event where the audience is more like general public as opposed to like stakeholders in the food system. So any help promoting that event is really appreciated. I think we're doing a good job like flyering and getting it out on social media and email newsletters and reaching out to partners, but it's just sort of something we haven't done on this project before to engage the general public. So any help is really appreciated on that. And again, hopefully Nick can follow up, forward my email to you all, and yeah, sure, you can share the flyer. Actually, one more thing I want to say about the project is that we've launched our newsletter as well. So we're sending out a bi-weekly newsletter. If you're not subscribed, I hope you do subscribe. You can find it at our website, which will also be in the email. I think that's all I want to talk about now. Unless I'll let Nick or Rebecca add anything if you want. Nick, specifically, you might want to talk about the government, sort of centric event.
I can mention that briefly, and I'll also say Noah had sent this information, so I'll get that out most likely not tomorrow because of the federal or the county holiday, and then I will get that information sent to all of you members on Friday before, which will most likely be before our minutes get posted. So all those dates that Noah had mentioned, we'll get those in your hands so you can help distribute and get the word out for the first meeting, which is next week, the first town hall. Then there is a meeting that a few of us, Jess Covey-Calkins at UW Extension and myself, have been working on convening, which will be to connect all of the different stakeholders in city and county government, the different department staff, across many different departments who work in these fields that touch on food system work that's emerging in the food plan. So that could be groups like the streets team in the city of Madison that works on composting, the Dane County Waste and Renewables. They've been here and presented on their work with the sustainability campus and the connections to food waste reduction there. But Parks also has a piece of their work that touches on food systems, extension, of course. And then there's others kind of peppered out throughout city and county departments that have work, part of their work that touches on this. I think we reflect a lot in the food plan team, as well as previously in this food policy council, that there isn't a singular food department in the city or county. And so looking at all of these staff and maybe leading and helping them form buy-in on the food plan itself before it's launched, what may be a strategy we can employ to help make sure the plan takes off and can be used and utilized.
If I can put on my other hat too for a second, which is running the Dane County Food Collective. We also are on the food plan project and have four active committees that are informing the food plan, and those are open to the public. So if anyone is interested, you're welcome to be a part of those. We have a commercial rent and community development committee that talks about getting food entrepreneurs into spaces and sort of navigating those difficulties, whether it's rent prices or build out. We have one related to workers' benefits. How do we make working in food systems a sustainable career in Dane County? We also have one related to edible landscapes. How do we create like community gardens, food forests, stuff like that, navigate the city permitting process for that stuff? And share resources to make that happen. And one other one that's escaping me right now. But if you're interested in joining those committees, you can reach out to me, noahb@reapfoodgroup.org.
Thanks, Noah. A lot of info, which I'm glad is going to be in the notes. Any questions right now, though, for Noah? Okay. Next is the Regional Ag and Food Sovereignty Working Group. Nan, did you want to talk about this?
Yeah, and I should just point out that the information that's in Regional Ag and Food Sovereignty here has also appeared under Farmland Preservation Task Force. So for people trying to track the issue, you might need to look in both places. But what you see in the minutes here was an update that we sent to everybody in the early part of June because we didn't have a May meeting. And the only updates to that are that about a week after we sent that email to everyone, like around the 12th of June, city staff finalized what they hope will be the final language for the leases, and they are going to start talking with the farmers they've been working with about those changes. And the project hopefully is still on track to have whatever revisions might be needed, and I have no idea what to anticipate in that regard, would be done in time for introduction to the Common Council in August, and working its way then through the boards and commissions in September, so that the Common Council can pass on a final format and these leases can actually be signed in October, so that the farmers have enough time to plan for their season next year, because there are some changes that some of them will need to probably work on over the winter. Any questions about that? There probably won't be any update for us, I wouldn't think, in July, and maybe not even in August, depending on timing. So this one is now sort of fully in staff's hands. But it will go to three boards and commissions before it comes to Food Policy Council because we're the lead committee on this. And so we get the last word before it goes to the Common Council. So it'll be back.
Dave?
Yeah, I have a question. Maybe I don't know enough about this history, but
I'm wondering, are these leases similar to standard farm leases, and they support farmers, or they allow farmers producing regular corn and soybean crops, or are the is there some use of the farmland to increase our human food supply?
Well, that's a complicated question, and it has a complicated answer. The city owns several hundred acres throughout the in larger plots, so anything from sort of 10 to 80 acres that is owned by different departments, and it has different futures. And until now, there hasn't been much discussion about what those acres are being used for, and so, or even how they were being farmed. And so in 2019, we started advocating for changes that would require much more attention to things like nutrient management planning and crop rotations and soil erosion, minimizing soil erosion for those commodity crops. There has not yet been a really good conversation about what other uses some of these properties could be put to, because not all of them are going to stay in agriculture, and we wouldn't want to start growing food for people in places where then a building would get built. That's just one of those situations that, you know, we try to plan ahead. So we try to get the properties that are owned by the Parks Division, for instance. We've been asking Parks to please plan proactively for community garden space, and maybe even for market garden space, where, for instance, 5 acres could really serve quite a number of people very well, but you would need to plan ahead for it. So right now, this was really the first big step, was to get the commodity farming that's happening to comply with state statute, frankly, and to start alerting farmers to the importance of nutrient management and managing soil erosion and, you know, and soil health, so that we're starting to move it in the right direction. But it's been a very, very heavy lift and a long slog, and getting these leases into a better position to take that next step is what's happening right now.
Okay, thank you. But the committee is at least aware and thinking about how to actually make use of the land where possible
Very
for.
much so. And also, the mayor has also convened some conversations that I have not been party to, but Nick Heckman might have something to say about where that is. She has started asking city departments to look for properties within the city that are not in conventional agriculture at all, but that have potential for growing food for people. And so this is on this kind of big ag contract lease situation has been on a different track for a long time. And then just in recent months, the mayor convened these conversations about, are there places in the city where people can be growing food for people beyond the ones that we've already identified? And the things NOAA is working on with the Food Collective in the Edible Landscapes Department, that's an old program. It's been around a lot, but it hasn't been used very much. So we actually know there are hundreds of properties around that are owned by the city that are tiny and underutilized and could be. And so, yeah, maybe no, I see that you've raised your hand. If you can say more about that, I think that would be really helpful to answering Dave's question.
I can't say more about the city, but what I wanted to say was, and was maybe if we could connect people in the city who are thinking about this idea to groups that, I've helped organize through the Edible Landscape Committee. Also, obviously, people like Rooted and Nicholas and people who are already doing a lot of that work already. To sit down and have a conversation and strategically think through like how to make that possible. Because I think something like we've talked about before, or some of us have talked about before, is like I think there's a recognition of the values of, things like growing food for humans, using this space wisely for food forests or community gardens and stuff like that. And there's a lot of interest and momentum to make those things happen. But it is a lift and it takes like coordination. And I think sometimes that coordination doesn't happen or doesn't happen strategically. So I'm very interested in helping that conversation move forward and maybe even using the food plan as a way to move that conversation forward and get those people to sit together in a room.
Yeah, no, add me to your edible landscaping group, and we can either go to your meeting or we can make you come to our regional Ag and Food Sovereignty meeting.
Cool. Let's talk about it.
That I'll just add on this topic of edible landscapes. Nan referenced the previous Food Policy Council work on this area, and that must be not in 8 or 9 years ago that this really kicked off, and formed a full process that residents of the city can apply to get approval to have, certain plots of land considered for an edible, food bearing, plant. The issue is, well, first of all, I don't think a lot of people are aware of that process, and it's been very sparsely utilized. So there is probably an opportunity here, and I like where you're going to build this into potentially part of the food plan, where not necessarily spelling out exactly what people need to do, but just that the recommendation itself is to connect people who are interested to this process that already exists. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity in this one. I will say, I think streets and parks have their own feelings about fruit-bearing trees and so forth, and the cleanup and the issues that can emerge there. So it's not a win-win-win, but I think there's going to be some opportunities here, and the mayor is behind and supports growing food for people right now.
Great question. Are there any others for me? Okay, stay tuned. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Nan. Oh, Dave, are you raising your hand? Now you're muted. Before you were talking.
Unmute.
There you go.
Okay, I was just doing a lease for somebody, an agricultural lease, and it talked about testing the nutrients and making sure that they're not being mined out of the property. Is that included in the leases?
We had, it was unclear whether some of the farmers were actually doing nutrient management plans. That is what a nutrient management plan does. You are required to test the soil from year to year. And so I think that will get better. Some of these farmers may have been doing it, but we were not confident of that. And it's kind of circles back to your initial question. We use Dane County's leases that they have, and they have hundreds and hundreds of acres that they are leasing to farmers. And they're the ones who actually are, they don't enforce, but they monitor and help farmers do nutrient management plans. And so the new city leases make specific mention of that, but they didn't before. And so our leases now will track the counties, which are were much more comprehensive. And honestly, it's these are things farmers are supposed to be doing anyway, but if you spell it all out in a lease, at least they're reminded that they're supposed to be doing all of that. So these leases will be a big improvement over the pretty skeletal ones that were used for a long time. And it's just not something that city staff knows a lot about. And I think we've finally persuaded them that it's okay to ask county staff, who are experts in this, to be the ones who actually pay attention to how these lands are being managed.
Thank you.
You're
Sorry, just
welcome.
want to piggyback on one last point on this issue of the nutrient management plans, which is that our friends at Dane County Extension have offered that they do have some training available for farmers. Dave, this might be for folks that you're working with that are writing these, if you're writing these leases with somebody and they're needing some more education on how to develop a nutrient management plan, there are some tools that you can kind of teach yourself how to do that. And then there may be some expertise that can help you somewhat to guide through that process. Otherwise, you might be looking at hiring someone to do that.
Thanks, Nick. And yeah, nutrient management plans can get complicated, so.
I did the UW Extension course and learned how to do it for my 50 organic acres. It
Nice.
is it's not a it's not hard when you're just doing a small one.
Okay. Dan Food Access Network.
Yeah, I wanted to invite Devika to join us. In fact, she reminded me that this is a opportunity to share a little bit about the Map a Meal Gap update. So, Devika, turn it over to you.
Thanks, Nick. So, I guess I can share my screen.
One second.
or maybe I can't share my
You
screen,
should be
or
able to now.
okay. Send request. You may have done it for the, I have two instances of myself on here, so
Okay, I think we got it.
okay. Well, Nick probably expected me to share a few numbers, and I ended up making a slide deck, but I'm going to go through it really fast. Just easier to like visualize this stuff. Okay, so is everyone seeing the slide that says food insecurity data updates? Hopefully.
Yep, we're seeing it.
Okay, great. So basically, this is some data that comes from, it kind of comes down the chain. So every year, the US, the census kind of processes collect food insecurity data from a sample of US residents, and they produce estimates at the national and state levels on food insecurity. And then Feeding America takes those estimates, and through their Map the Meal Gap study, they estimate food insecurity at sub-state levels. So they go all the way down county to and census tract even. Although the smaller you get, the wider the sort of confidence interval or margins of error. But they still have estimates at the census tract level, which is interesting. And then they have some more demographic categories at those levels, including children and race ethnicity at the county level. They don't have that down to the census tract. And the public can access most of this data. So you may have been to this site before, but they have a map of the US and you can drill down and they have lots of data and it's interactive and it's very cool. But as a network food bank, Second Harvest gets access to more data. So we do get the census tract level data and a big Excel spreadsheet of all the data so we can really dive in there. But unfortunately, all these steps take time. And so the hot off the press latest data are 2023, which really feels like forever ago for a lot of reasons. But that's where we're at. So this data I'm going to share with you is from the latest one is from 2023. So this is going to be Dane County data, and the blue bar is overall food insecurity rate from 2019 to 2023, and the orange is the child food insecurity rate. So child food insecurity is just generally higher, a little bit higher than the overall food insecurity rate. But interestingly, the trend you can see is things were going down. The pandemic hit, food insecurity went down further, actually, but then it bounced back up between 2021 and 2023. And I think we can probably guess that trend is going to continue to increase. If you want to know more about some of the whys and details about why this trend line looks like this, you can check out a report that was published a few months ago by Nick and myself that lives somewhere on the public health site. And Nick, feel free, or anyone can feel free to raise your hand or jump in if you have other things to say. But I think the pandemic, yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Sorry, just going to say I'll make sure to link the report in our minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I think the that dip there really shows that all the programs that went out during the pandemic really provided protections for folks against food insecurity, children in particular. So then another kind of slice and dice of data is by race ethnicity. So the only race ethnicity data that they have is Black, Hispanic, and white. They don't kind of have enough data really to slice and dice by other ethnic and racial groups. So those are the three that they provide. But they do give us a pretty clear indication in Dane County that there's a big disparity in food insecurity rate among BIPOC or Black and Hispanic residents compared to white residents. And then just some quick economic metrics that they provide, which are kind of interesting. So when you look at food insecure residents in Dane County, 48%, almost half of those residents are actually above thresholds for SNAP eligibility. So SNAP is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or food stamps. We call it food share in Wisconsin. And so if you're above the threshold for eligibility, then you can't receive that. So if you are experiencing food insecurity, you are turning more towards the charitable food system. And I think, especially in the last few years with inflation and wages not rising as fast as costs, we're seeing more people fall into this place where they're earning above these thresholds, and we're seeing really high rates of increased need at the food pantries in our network. Similarly, 42% of food insecure children are in households above 185% of the federal poverty level, a cutoff for free and reduced lunch. And then Map the Meal Gap also estimates an average weekly budget shortfall for food insecure households. So this is for Dane County, which is $25 a week. And then I did just want to pop in here. If you're not familiar with the ALICE report, United Way produces this report, and ALICE it stands for, and my screen share thing is like covering the thing, but it's so you can, I'm like forgetting what it stands for.
Asset limited, income constrained, employed.
An employee. Thank you. I was having a just a blank brain moment. So again, this just talks about how there's a group of, so we have the federal poverty level, so which is a very ridiculously low amount in the blue. So $30,000 a year for a family of four. And so you can see 10% of people of households in Dane County fall into that level. And then the sort of ALICE gap, as it's called, is the sort of true cost of living. That place between the federal poverty level and the true cost of living. So for a family of four in Dane County, that's $81,000. And so about a third of folks fall either into that ALICE gap or below the federal poverty level. And so these are folks that are going to be at higher risk of food insecurity. But that kind of speaks to the folks that are not eligible for those federal programs, but still may experience food insecurity. So it's a neat report. They have lots of data. If you're interested in looking at that, I've linked that in there. So then taking a closer look at Madison. So now we're looking at the census tract data. This is kind of a rough map, but the darker blue indicates higher rates of food insecurity, up to 15%. And then the lighter blue is lower rates down to 7%. So now you can kind of see this is zoomed in on Madison. There are the lakes. And so certain areas of town pop up, south, southeast, northeast areas, some in the center. So, but there can be, two neighborhoods right next to each other or two census tracts right next to each other, with very different food insecurity rates. This is just another kind of view of that map, but instead of percent of food insecurity, this is actually each dot is a person. So you can kind of see like, where people are concentrated. Yeah, I think these slides will be shared so you can, look more carefully at that. And then I had to, put the food access improvement map up to kind of see, I was curious how these kind of overlaid. And the food access improvement map is something that Nick and the public health folks put together. And actually, I'd be curious if there's going to be a new one of these, Nick. But this, the food access improvement map is about access. and income. So looking at kind of places that could be vulnerable to food insecurity due to that low access. And so sort of interesting when you kind of like look at the neighborhoods I've circled on the census tract map, I've circled the ones that are sort of highlighted on the food access improvement map. And some of them have higher rates of food insecurity and some lower. And I thought it'd be interesting if, I don't know if we have a map of HRAP grant recipients, but that could be cool to sort of look at over time, see if it kind of, not that, you know, we can necessarily like attribute any causation or anything, but it could just be interesting to look at that over time and see if there are any changes that go along with it in terms of food access or food insecurity. But that is, I think, all I had to share. So thanks.
Noah?
Yeah, this is really great. I appreciate the slides. I was wondering how much of these slides I could use for our State of the Food System presentation next week. Or,
yeah. I mean, you can use, as far as I'm concerned, I think you can use anything. I think that should be fine.
Cool. At least the, you know, statistics from it. I think it's really helpful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
I just have a comment, which is that I think it makes sense to have the HRAP grants based on access, because it's where it's about access, retail access. But I do think about things like the seed grants, which are just about food in general, and how those, I think, also ask, like, are you in the food access improvement area for your project? But there's all those people in the isthmus that I feel like get left out by that question. Anyway, I'm not in charge of that committee, but I'll go to Nan.
Just a quick question slash observation. I think, you know, once slides like this come into a recorded meeting, they can, you know, hopefully be attached to our minutes and sort of become public at that moment. And so, Devika, that's partly by way of saying, you know, when you do these kinds of things, be aware that you are kind of putting them out there. So if there's anything that, you know, you have people need to be careful about, you could certainly share that offline. But this is a great set of slides, and I hope that it does get attached to our minutes so that people can find it when they need it. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah.
And I'll just chime in to say that I will make sure this is attached. David has already sent it along, so we're in good shape there. While I have the mic, I will just add a few comments that I think for this Dane Food Access Network update. Maybe I'll forego my public health update later on. What Devika is talking about, when you look at the rate of food insecurity that's gone up from 2021 to 2023, we don't have the numbers for the last 2 years in front of us. But what we know is that we saw dramatic increases at the food pantries and food bank during that 2024 and into 2025 period. So we're really looking at anticipated increases in food insecurity for the next couple data sets at minimum. And that's before you get to some of the policy stuff that's swirling right now. We're all, of course, tracking the budget reconciliation bill. And I just wanted to put this out in front of the group that the changes to SNAP, in particular in the House version of the Big Beautiful Bill, are perhaps the most dramatic and significant potential cuts to that program that have ever been proposed, and they're very close to potentially passing. And specifically, what they would do is two things. First would be to expand the definition of who is subject to work requirements currently there's, you have to be under age 54 and you can't have a child in your household or a dependent in your household And this bill would expand that to age 64, and you would also be subject to these work requirements if your child was older than age 7 rather than age 18. So it would greatly increase the number of people, including folks with school age kids, that would be subject to having to work or seek job training for 80 hours a month to get their SNAP benefit. And this is a similar mechanism that they're looking at for Medicaid. So think about 80 hours of work for your $200 SNAP benefit. A lot of people are just not going to go for that. It's going to be a non-starter for them, just on the other time constraints in their lives. The implication of what happens when you fail to reach those work requirements is that you can only receive SNAP benefits for 3 months in a 3 year period. So lots of folks would start to fall off. And we've seen this in Wisconsin for the last 10 years. We've been real pilot state on this work requirement stuff, starting under the previous governor. The other suggested change in the bill is to split the administrative costs more heavily into states for administering SNAP and also Medicaid. And that's bad in general because states are going to have huge budget challenges to find the other 25% that they're now asked to pay for administratively to operate these programs. But it's particularly tough in Wisconsin because we also have cost sharing at the county level. Not every state does it that way. So county budgets are also going to be challenged by this. And then lastly, it's an important point to mention, and I know Lindsay can also speak to this, but another component of the bill is the reduction of funding for SNAP education, which has been historically an important partner to the SNAP program in that nutrition education piece. People always say, why do folks eat this unhealthy stuff on their SNAP benefits? Why are we paying for that? Well, we're investing in nutrition education for schools, for pantries and other spaces to help address that concern. And it's been a very effective program over the years. So it would be a shame to lose that. And that could affect some folks even here in Dane County. So I'll leave it there. I know there's a lot going on with the bill. I don't expect every single thing to happen how the House has presented it. Senate's still making their version of this. But it is a big deal. And I just want everybody to be prepared because it circles back to what David is showing us that we really could be on the cusp of dramatic increases in hunger, food pantry attendance, food bank pounds distributed. And that's on top of already record highs, right? So the charitable food system is not the solution to reducing government support for hunger prevention. Just it'll never fill that gap. So anyway, I'll leave it there. If folks have questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, we can move on.
Duh.
I just want to add, it's obviously a much smaller amount of money and a much smaller piece of this puzzle, but all of that news is coming off the back of cuts to the LFPA program, which is really affecting local farmers and how they participate with emergency food systems. I'm sort of more familiar with the farmer end, but we're a lot of farmers that we work with through REAP Food Group are seeing a loss of markets for their sales, first of all. And then second, seeing it in the food plan process as we got into the community and talked to people that run their own pantries and stuff like that, just the lack of fresh produce, which is, I think, I'm sure people can attest to this, but from what I've seen in reporting and what I hear on the ground is highly requested by people accessing the pantry, and a lot of that is drying up because of the lack of funding for LFPA and other programs. So, just adding to sort of the bad news that Nick presented, but yeah, I think it's a real we're in a real tough spot, and I think it's also interesting next to what Devika just presented on showing how all of those programs during COVID positively impacted food security. And now we're seeing all that funding dry up and then adding cuts to that. So I don't know. I'm just in a space where thinking about, like, we know what solutions look like. We were able to do it with a lot of funding. Now we have no funding. How do we move forward? And also keep our minds towards solution and feeding people.
Thanks, Noah. Okay. Any. Sorry, I know where we are. We're at the Farmland Preservation Task Force. Is there any updates other than those land ag leases?
No, I would say that there are no other projects in that pipeline that I'm aware of that
Okay.
need reporting on. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks. Next is the school district, and I is there any update that you know of?
No update received this month.
Okay. And then double dollars.
Yeah, the double dollar season is underway at the markets. Definitely a small example of one of the local programs that I think we can be proud of and can help stand up some supports in the challenging ecosystem that we all are just talking about here. Maybe the flip side of that is that one of the ways we qualify people for double dollars is through their SNAP participation. So if fewer people are on SNAP, fewer people will be eligible for double dollars, which I think is yet another way. And to the MMSD update, a lot of kids get directly certified into school meals through SNAP as well. So there's kind of trickle effects, ripple impacts of some of these changes that could have much broader effects than I think even our policymakers are considering right now. But yes, double dollars is underway. You can direct people to the large area markets in Dane County, and they can get some support for fresh fruits and vegetables.
Thanks, Nick. Short community gardens update, which is that sort of as a result of requests from community gardeners, organizers mostly, we'll be doing a series of tours that will be hosted by each of the community gardens, and we being more the community gardens and less rooted, so I won't be at all of them. But they'll be at different gardens around the county starting actually this Sunday. There'll be one on the north side at the Westport Farm in Wanakee, which will also have a workshop on cover crop and pollinators. And then there'll be one down at the Bedrock Community Center at 2. Sorry, this was Sunday at 1 p.m. And then the Bedrock one Sunday at 2 p.m. on foraging and medicinal plants. And I'll send Nick a link for those ones as well as all the other ones. So yeah, come check out some gardens, maybe not near you. And next is food system assessment.
I don't have any update this month. Rebecca, do you have any updates on the assessment side of things?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
Oh. Okay. Any updates from business development specialist?
I didn't receive anything this month. I know George has been pretty busy with the economic development plan that he's been involved in. I would anticipate, and he's expressed a lot of interest in rejoining the council this summer, maybe next month or in August, to share a bigger update about some of the public market details and some other pieces of work in his portfolio.
Okay, thanks, Nick. You want to do any public health?
I'll forego that. I feel like I've shared enough today.
Okay. Food's important, public health. Okay. Extension, Dane County. I got it from Jess. I can do it. And I think, yes, I'm looking at the right one, not last ones. They have a workshop Saturday, June 21st from 8:30 to 1 at the Urban League Black Business Hub on South Park Street. First come, first serve, free. So register at the link that's going to be in the notes. This workshop is a collaboration Oh, sorry. The workshop is the profitability of your mobile food business. It's a collaboration between the Mung Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce, UW Extension, and the Food Finance Institute. And then Dane County released their 2025 Partners in Equity grant. There's 12 recipients. Oh, Sam. Allied Food Pantry, ARC Community Services, Horizon High School, Lakeview Community School, Marshall Public Schools, Mount Horeb Farmers Market, Native Food Network, Project Home, REAP, Sunshine, Sustain Dane, and the Wanakee Neighborhood Connections. And then finally, Dane County is launching their food scrap drop-off sites June 1st. Launched. Four food scrap stop drop-offs will be open for use beginning June 1st at Warner Park, the Henry Vilas Zoo, the Quarry Skate Park in Middleton, and the Public Works Building in McFarland. The food scrap stop located at the Badger Prairie Needs Network in the city of Verona will be open by August 1st. Residents also can drop off food scraps in the orange collection carts at the Dane County landfill during operating hours. Composting. And that is all of the things that I copied from Jess's email. I don't see it on the agenda, but are there any announcements before we head out? Seeing no hands for announcements, can I get a hand for a motion to adjourn? Dave?
I was also going to point out
Oh,
that
go ahead.
scissors are sharp. Scissors are
Oh,
sharp.
sorry. I didn't mean to be distracting everyone. I'm just fiddling with things. Lindsay?
So moved.
Okay. And I think that's a second from Dave. I will assume unanimous consent for adjourning the meeting unless I hear a hand for the vote on that. And I see no hands, so we are adjourned. Bye, everyone.